to everyone. I am delighted to be down from Shreveport, and I get to sit with the New Orleanians. You've got an all-Louisiana panel, which doesn't happen too often, but the two resident judges, Judge Englehart and Judge Douglas. And so we have the typical garden variety in our 3 days of a mixture of cases. You all are veterans there. You know the rules. Main thing for me is just to make sure you speak up in the mic so that we can hear you. And sometimes there are people in the audience that want to hear you. But beyond that, we're ready to go. So we'll call the first case, 25-30241, United States versus Long. Ms. Griffin.
May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, my name is Mignon Griffin, and I represent Derek Long. Mr. Long is serving an almost 20-year sentence based primarily on the word of a man whose credibility is no better than a coin flip. The government knew this for months before Mr. Long's indictment and for over a year before his conviction, yet it failed to disclose to Mr. Long until 19 days after he was convicted. And I submit that Mr. Long should receive a new trial. We cannot talk about Mr. Long's case without also talking about the prosecution of a man named Kylan Manning. The Long and Manning cases have three things in common. They have the same confidential informant, a man named Jerome White. They had the same prosecutor, AUSA Aaron Crawford. And they had the same investigator from Metro Narcotics in Monroe, a detective named Anthony Cowan. Mr. Manning's case was indicted first. At his second detention hearing, the government acknowledged that Mr. Manning could not possibly have sold drugs on two of the four charged occasions because the government had confirmed that Mr. Manning had, in fact, been out of the country on a cruise. So Mr. White, the informant, had lied on two of the four identifications of Mr. Manning as the drug seller. This hearing, where this information was disclosed by the government, occurred approximately 3 months before my client was indicted.
Counsel, you make an interesting argument, but can you tell us what in the Manning case, what corroboration, if any, was offered as a matter of evidence in the Manning case as opposed to this case where the government will get up here and say, and in the brief points out, that they were corroborating things about his testimony in this case. I want to compare what happened in Manning with this case.
As best I recall, Your Honor, they just relied on his word in Manning, and then the government did not pursue those two charges in his case. He ultimately pled to, as I recall, a gun charge because they had gotten a search warrant. The court allowed the search warrant to stand after a motion to suppress because the two of the four occasions were correct, apparently. So the search warrant stood, and then he pled to the gun charge. They had found the gun during the course of the search warrant. But I don't know of any other evidence that corroborated him. I distinctly recall Detective Cowan saying in the testimony that he could not see the faces of the people involved in the transaction.
Well, but in this case, you agree that White is a player in this case, but there's also some corroboration. He's conducting a controlled buy or making communications that are being monitored so that it's not entirely, you know, one word against the other.
It was one word against that. It was his word and nothing else, Your Honor. He was wearing a recording device, and it produced nothing of value. It was one drug buy from my client. The government was only able to offer at trial an 8-second video. It shows no drugs, no money, no drug talk. You can't even understand the audio that's on it. All it shows is my client's face. But my client was not the only person at the home that day. So it really shows nothing other than my client was at a house where he routinely was found on the day that Mr. White showed up there. And there was, to my recollection, and I'm sure that it would have come out at trial in a more forceful way, if there had been any evidence that the agents were listening on the recording device and monitoring what was happening. Significantly, Your Honor, on the two occasions where Mr. White falsely identified Mr. Manning, there was also no corroboration. Detective Cowan testified at the hearing on the motion to suppress that the recording devices produced nothing of value. And he said that, well, sometimes White would cover the devices up. He was doing something. I don't know what.
Well, I guess the reason I'm asking is because Manning seems to be a pure, he said, word against word type of case where the allegations from the witness should be entirely discounted. Whereas in this case, maybe things are a little different.
There's just not a lot of corroboration here, Your Honor. There's none as far as the identity of the person who sold those drugs. Mm-hmm. And the evidence on the general conspiracy was very weak. There was a wiretap, but all it really produced against my client was the fact that he liked to smoke marijuana. Mr. Ard, who was the homeowner where my client was living and working on cars in the yard, Mr. Ard asked him, was the marijuana good quality? And he was like, yeah, it's very good. And you can listen to the wiretap. You can say he's high. You can tell he's high.
But at the end of the day, Why is it you're not just making a sufficiency of the evidence argument? It was a jury trial. Some cases stronger than others, you know that. So, notwithstanding what you say, weak, whatever, what is it that, you know, made the jury's verdict so infirm that on behalf of your client, you're entitled to a new trial?
Because my client did not have the ability to cross-examine Mr. White with the fact that 50% of the time, he lies when he implicates somebody as a seller in a drug transaction.
There are lots, I hate to say this, there are lots of liars who testify in trials. I mean, it's a fact, but in truth, many a person throws their hand up and say, I swear to tell the whole truth, and that's not what they tell. But with a jury trial, you know, the jury is charged, the pattern instructions, credibility, and all that. I mean, I'm making light of your arguments. I'm just saying the relief you're asking for is a new trial.
Yes, sir.
Which is, you know, serious relief. And
absolutely.
So I'm just trying to say, beyond the sufficiency argument, what is it that was so pervasive that just, you know, entitles that relief a complete do-over of a jury trial where the jury heard these witnesses, you know, saw the infirmities, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, how would we get there within the midst of the oceans of cases that we have where similar complaints would be, we creating new law, you're asking for a new legal proposition, what?
No, sir, I'm just asking you to apply the standard to this case. This is clearly a Brady violation. The government doesn't even argue that. It's clearly
Did you make a Brady argument before the district court?
His district court counsel referenced Giglio, but she primarily argued newly discovered evidence. She did not. She argued newly discovered evidence and the Berry test. But he was never going to prevail under the Berry test because one of the prongs of that test is that it not be used just for impeachment. And this clearly would have gone to impeachment. It was an entirely different level of impeachment, though, Your Honors, than...
But if the Brady violation is so pernicious, how, pray tell, does it not get raised below? And you're asking us to sua sponte, take note, you know, of the perniciousness of it. I mean, you're able counsel. You're making the argument, but.
Your Honor, I don't know why Ms. Winchell made the argument that she did. I don't know why she didn't automatically recognize it as Brady. That was the first thing that jumped out at me when I read the record, but she didn't. And the government didn't say, oh, it's a Brady violation. The government, I'd like to point out, the government, when it made its response to her motion for a new trial, was very disingenuous in what it advised the court. It told the court, oh, the DEA agent didn't know that the CI had lied. But the AUSA was sitting in court when the CI's lies were talked about, and the detective was the same on both cases, and he knew. And under Cosby Whitley, the government is obviously responsible for what all the detective knew as well.
What's your best case? I mean, besides Brady, I mean, what's the best case under, no case is the same, but I mean, what would be the principal case, among others, that you would definitely want us to lean in on?
Well, Sipe, in terms of the nature of the impeachment versus what the government actually disclosed, the nature of the evidence versus what the government actually disclosed. But I acknowledge that Sipe was not a plain error case. But, Your Honor, about 5 months after Mr. Long was indicted, there was a suppression hearing in Manning. The government at that point was represented by the same prosecutor who prosecuted Mr. Long, and the detective affirmed that Mr. White, the CI, had falsely identified Mr. Manning as a drug dealer 2 of 4 times. Yet he defended his CI because Detective Cowan, testified White had worked on 6 other investigations, including other federal cases, too. So even if AUSA Crawford, I mean, he's not here to defend himself, even if he said, I didn't know the identity of the CI, he knew at that point that this CI worked other federal cases. And he, at that very moment, had a case with this detective, with a CI. He should have followed up. But as I said, under Cosby-Whitley, the detective's knowledge is imputed to the government.
Counsel, do I understand the briefing correctly that you agree we're on a plain error review?
Reluctantly, yes, sir. I have to acknowledge this argument was not made below. But I think that, I've already said a lot of this. As I said, there's no question that the evidence was suppressed. There's no question that it was favorable to Mr. Long. Especially in this case, Your Honors, his defense was focused almost exclusively on the credibility of the witnesses testifying against him. Had he been able to impeach Mr. White with the fact that he falsely implicated people as a drug seller, under the facts of this case, that would have been a major thing to be able to do. He was able to impeach Mr. White with the fact that he was a multi-convicted felon. He was able to impeach him with the fact that he stole the drugs and the buy money. But the fact that he did exactly what Mr. White was asserting, was that he was falsely implicated, would have been critical to impeaching the CI. Because, as I said, in this particular case, there was really nothing other than the CI's testimony to say that Mr. Long was the drug dealer.
Which is probably why he didn't plead guilty and he went to trial. He didn't plead guilty because the evidence was what you say. He rolled it dice. He went to trial on the theory that 12 people may not believe this person. Credibility, I'm sure his lawyer made a passionate argument on his behalf. Weak case, don't convict my client. Jury convicts him.
Your Honor, he could have just not gone to trial because he was not guilty. I mean, the government does sometimes. I had not guilty verdicts during my career, Your Honor. Sometimes it happens. You know?
Now, Ms. Griffin, you know that I know that you were very recently on the other side of that table in the U.S. Attorney's Office. You got a different hat on.
I do have a different hat on.
I've been trying to ignore that fact, but you just won't let me.
Trying to do good in my retirement, Your
Honor. No, you're doing well, and I'm not making light of your argument at
yes,
all.
Sir.
I'm just saying, you know, when I read the case, I'm like, he didn't plead guilty. You know, it's dicey, you know, where the government's relying on his informants, so maybe he has a shot that won't be, you know, believed, but I just sort of come back where I start on a plain error case. Where sufficiency is at the heart of it, I mean, how do we reverse a jury verdict where they heard all of this? I mean, how would we write that?
But they didn't hear all of this, Your Honor. They did.
Well, I mean, they heard the trial, right?
They did hear the trial.
And they heard a significant amount of impeachment evidence on Mr. White as well.
They heard that he was a multi-convicted felon, and they heard that he stole the drugs during one of the buys from Ms. Rard. But the evidence that he falsely implicated someone, I mean, that was the heart of his testimony, was his implication of Derek Long as the drug seller. And he was deprived of the ability to impeach him based on that. It's just an entirely different character of evidence than what the government was able, or what the defense was able to use. I'm getting down into my yellow light. Your Honor, it's a Brady violation. It's clear and obvious. The error affected his substantial rights. Your Honor, I submit that had he been able to go to trial with this evidence, first of all, I submit that if the government had, well, I mean, not say that. If he had gone to trial with this evidence, his impeachment of Mr. White would have been much more effective. And so this did affect his substantial rights. I think the outcome of the trial could have been different, or would probably have been different, but for the Brady violation. The evidence against my client was otherwise weak, and this impeachment would have seriously undermined Mr. White's identification of Mr. Long. And the court, I submit, should correct this error, because the fact that a man is serving almost 20 years on the word of Jerome White seriously affects the fairness, integrity, or public reputation of judicial proceedings. And I submit that Mr. Long should have a new trial. Thank you.
All right, thank you. You've reserved your rebuttal time. All right, we'll hear from the government. Ms. Choi.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Celia Choi of the United States. The question in this case is a narrow one. On plain error review, is there a reasonable probability that the undisclosed impeachment evidence of the government's informant, Jerome Wright, would have changed the outcome of the trial? The answer is no, because that additional impeachment evidence would not have seriously undermined the government's otherwise strong case against Mr. Long. And that's true for three reasons. First, as in this court's case of Wilson versus Whitley, Mr. Long did not present a strong case, or indeed any case, of mistaken identity. There's no dispute that Jerome White, purchased 2 ounces of meth at James Ard's house that day. There's also no dispute that Mr. Long was there. He was caught on video, and he's admitted as much. The only other person present was Mr. Ard's teenage son. Now, regardless of what happened in the Manning case, it's very unlikely that Mr. White would have confused Mr. Long, who was a 42-year-old man, for a teenage boy. And he had no incentive to falsely implicate Mr. Long in that transaction. Moreover, if somebody else was there that day, if somebody else had conducted that transaction, Mr. Long would have known that because he was there too. And presumably, he would have brought that out on cross-examination of Jerome White. But he didn't do so. So even if the jury had heard that Jerome White had misidentified another defendant in another case under different circumstances, that wouldn't have given it reason to doubt Jerome White's testimony that Mr. Long sold him drugs that day. Second, Jerome White's testimony was corroborated. It was corroborated by the wiretap evidence. Mr. Long was caught on tape, this is Government's Exhibits 1 and 2 at trial, conducting a very similar series of events. On that wiretap evidence, a drug purchaser comes to the house and wants to purchase drugs, but Mr. Ard is not there. So Mr. Ard tells Mr. Long, complete this transaction in my stead. Now that transaction didn't go through, but it was only because Mr. Ard was sold out of meth and coke, which is what that particular drug purchaser wanted that day. By every indication, if Mr. Ard hadn't been sold out, Mr. Long would have completed that transaction. So that evidence demonstrates Mr. Long's role in this conspiracy, which is the same role that occurred on February 27th, 2023. And that's consistent, too, with all the evidence that Mr. Long was essentially living at Mr. Ard's house. There was testimony from several witnesses that he was always there. The agents observed his truck outside, parked for long periods of time. And the fact that everyone agrees, there's no dispute, that on February 27th, Mr. Ard instructed Jerome White, he said, I can sell you $300 worth of meth. I'm not home right now, so go buy the house. Why did he do that? Because he knew that Mr. Long would be there and that Mr. Long would complete that transaction. Third, as the district court observed, Jerome White's credibility was very effectively challenged at trial. The jury heard that Mr. White was a convicted felon, that he was a drug user, that he was paid for his cooperation, that he received benefits from the government, such as payment for a hotel, money for food. He expected a check after his testimony. They heard that he stole buy money and that he stole drugs while working as a confidential informant, and that his informant agreement was terminated as a result. The district court instructed the jury that because he was a paid informant, Mr. White's testimony should be received and evaluated with great caution. The jury heard all this, and they nonetheless credited Jerome White's testimony because it was corroborated and because it was consistent with all the evidence in the case.
Counsel, from your remarks here today and from the briefing, is it correct that the government is only contesting materiality in this case?
That is correct, Your Honor. The government acknowledges that this evidence, it should have been disclosed, and that was a significant oversight, Your Honor. Nonetheless, materiality is a separate prong of the Brady inquiry, and reversal or a new trial is warranted only if the evidence was material.
So counsel on the other side says that the evidence at issue would give them a different line of questioning on impeachment evidence. It would impeach him as a person who, as a liar or a person who doesn't tell the truth. Do you, what would be your response, what's your response to that argument?
Certainly, this evidence would have provided additional fodder for cross-examination, not disputing that. However, there's no evidence that Mr. White affirmatively lied in the Manning case as opposed to being simply mistaken about the identity of the person from whom he purchased drugs. And so it would have been additional fodder for cross, and the defense could have brought out an additional reason why this testimony, to encourage the jury to think that that testimony was unreliable. But that evidence was cumulative of all of the other impeachment evidence, and it would not have so seriously undermined that informant's testimony as to warrant a new trial here. Ms. Griffing mentioned the case of United States versus Sipe as the strongest case, and so I'd like to address that. In Sipe, this court recognized that the general rule is that cumulative impeachment evidence is not material, but it carved out a narrow exception for that rule based on the very extraordinary circumstances in that case. And there you had very extensive benefits that had been granted to the government witnesses that had not been disclosed. And that undisclosed evidence went directly to pre-existing weaknesses in the government's case. There was evidence in the record that those witnesses couldn't have seen what they claimed to have seen in their testimony. And there was evidence that they changed their account of what happened after receiving the benefits. And in addition to that evidence, there were two additional Brady violations. So that's a very different case, and it's a narrow exception to this general rule that cumulative impeachment evidence is not material. And I'll note also that Sipe was not a plain error case. Even despite the facts that I just described, the court said that materiality was a very close case, and one of the judges on the panel dissented. And so I submit that if that case had come up on plain error review, the result would have been different. So, Your Honor, this case I would submit is closer to the case of Wilson v. Whitley. That's a case, it was a habeas case, but it was a pre-EDPA habeas case. And there was undisclosed impeachment evidence concerning the state's sole witness to positively identify the defendant, and that was an assault case. The court nonetheless found that impeachment evidence was not material because that witness's testimony was consistent with the other evidence in the case and because the defendant had not presented a strong case for mistaken identity. The last point I'll make, if Your Honors don't have any further questions, is that this is a case of plain error review. The issue, as I said, is only materiality. The government submits that this is not a close case on materiality, but if Your Honors were to think that there was a close call here that maybe reasonable minds could differ, then that should be the end of the inquiry, because here on plain error review, the defendant has the burden to demonstrate a clear and obvious error. And that did not occur here for all the reasons that I have already stated. So the government respectfully requests that the court affirm the judgment of the district court.
All right, thank you. Ms. Griffin, you've reserved your rebuttal time.
Your Honors, I'm not asserting that Mr. White was mistaken as to who sold him the drugs. I'm asserting that he lied about who sold him the drugs. Why he did that, I don't know. We did not have the opportunity to cross-examine him about that at trial, perhaps because at least one of the other people at the house was a teenager and he didn't think he was gonna get brownie points from his handlers if he brought a case against a juvenile, because that wouldn't have been an adult felony. I don't know. The point is we don't know these things because my client was deprived of the ability to ask these questions in the district court. As far as the wiretap, Your Honor, there was a phone call where Mr. Art had apparently sent someone to the house to buy $100 worth of marijuana. Mr. Long handed him the marijuana. And then when the person said, "I want cocaine and meth," Mr. Long was like, "Nope, you got to talk to Mr. Art." And he put Mr. Art on the phone. And the cocaine and meth talk was between the man's name was Migo, was between Migo and Mr. Art. My client did not sell anybody and did not try to sell anybody cocaine and meth. He was, as I said in my brief, at best involved in a low-level marijuana conspiracy, and he was a marijuana user. The wiretap is not nearly as damning as the government contends. Also, the fact that Mr. Long was at the house, well, that's where he slept most nights. As best I can tell, he was apparently mostly homeless. He spent a lot of nights sleeping at Mr. Art's house, and he worked on cars in the driveway. So, of course, the poll cams there showed that he was at the house. He was at the house. The government says, well, he must have been at the house when this transaction with the CI happened, so he could say who sold the drugs. If he didn't know there was a drug sale going on of any relevance, that's just another day to him. How is he supposed to remember when he's indicted a year later? If he had nothing to do with it, how is he supposed to know he was supposed to remember that day who was in the house selling drugs when he's out in the yard repairing cars? There was nothing. If he wasn't involved, there was nothing significant about that day, and there was no one he could or he should have been able to identify. So I think that's not a very effective argument. Anyway, Your Honor, this evidence is of such a different character and nature. The fact that the main thing this witness did was identify my client, and he falsely identified other people, and we could not use, Mr. Long could not use that at his trial to impeach this witness. That would have made an entirely different trial. This case was very weak. There was not strong corroboration of what Mr. White was saying. There was scant little corroboration of what he was saying. The agents could say, he left us with money, he came back with drugs, he went to this house. But again, there were other people at the house, so there was not strong corroboration. This is not cumulative evidence. This is an entirely different type of evidence for impeachment. And I submit that even under plain error, Mr. Long should receive a new trial.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Griffin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Of course,
court appointed in the role. We note your many years of valued service on the other side as an AUSA, and the fact that you have signed up to do court-appointed work is really to be saluted by the court as a whole. As you know, we appreciate very much court-appointed counsel for taking these cases and making, you know, challenging arguments, but to the court. And so we value that, and we thank you for your service in this case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, both sides. The case will be submitted.